We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting about home decorating from The Independent, read by Kathy Clugston.
Graphic designer Ben went for bright colours in the bathroom and painted his stool to match.
What a graphic designer. Our thanks to Jeff Peters for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Neil Delamere and Hugo Rifkin. And opposite them, on my left, Jen Brister and Nish Kumar. Welcome all. How are you? How are you doing, Neil? How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, fine. Thank
yes.
You.
Fine. I was over visiting my parents, so I flew over this morning from Europe, and just wanted to see how that would go down before I do the rest of the jokes. Not as well as I expected.
Well, welcome to our country.
Thank you.
How are you, Hugo?
I'm good. I was quoted this week in the Bundestag.
Ooh. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Snap.
I made a joke on Twitter before Christmas about Brexit being like a cheese submarine, and a German MP delivered this in the Bundestag to zero laughter.
Wow. That's excellent. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad that your fame is spreading. Kathy, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I've had a cracking day in Con today.
It's really?
A continuity, yeah. I don't know if any of you were listening earlier, but I managed to announce to the listening public that the film programme would be discussing a film that had been nominated for 6 Oscars.
It's good, because when the Oscars are on, people forget about the Oscars,
they
don't
do forget
they?
About them.
How are you, Jen?
I'm very well indeed. I've just been doing what a lot of us have been doing in the face of a no-deal Brexit, just stockpiling insulin and building a panic room. So... Yeah. Not even diabetic, but I thought it seemed like the right thing to do.
Nish,
Mr. Jupp,
are you coping?
Yeah, I'm coping. I was in Belfast this week. I thought I'll tailor my whip-smart brand of political humour to some of the local situations. And I was really laying into the DUP and Arlene Foster, and they all went a bit quiet, and I was a bit surprised. I sort of thought the people I'd be performing to might be more receptive to that sort of material. And then afterwards, my support act and friend, Catherine Bohart, informed me that I had been saying Arlene Phillips the entire time.
I very much feel your pain.
In fairness, the marches would be much better.
Right. Neil, who's gone from A to B?
Oh, I think I know who this is. This is Theresa May's withdrawal deal. She was hammered last week in the House of Commons. So she was meant to tell us what the plan B was this week. And she knew she had to pivot, she had to be flexible, she had to change direction. So what she did was confound expectations by pivoting to the exact same position that she was already in. Like, nobody saw that coming. Much like Prince Philip, when he sees another car, she ploughed on in the direction she was already going. Surely when the approach doesn't work, you have to change the approach, is my argument. She must be terrible at battleships, I've always thought. So, B1. No, Prime Minister, that's missed. You want another guess? I do. B1. No, that's still wrong. Well, I've listened to everybody. I've taken on board everybody's considerations. I'd like one more guess. Yes, Prime Minister. B1. There's something wrong with you, isn't there? So, it's just really, really odd. We're getting to this position where she has ruled out an Article 50 extension. She has said there isn't going to be a second referendum. She has refused to rule out no deal. Meanwhile, we have civil servants. They're freaking out about the economic hit. If there is no deal, they're just running around Whitehall. Well, I've run the numbers, Barbara, and we're going to have to sell David Attenborough on the Antiques Roadshow. Like, it's just... You know what I hope happens? This is just a personal point of view. I would like a really, really, really soft Brexit so Ireland isn't hammered, the economy isn't hammered, and the economy of the UK isn't hammered. And everything that we've been worried about for 2.5 years, that kind of... turns into... It's the same feeling. You know when you're driving down the motorway and your headlamps catch the reflective strips in the back of a police car? And you go, oh, penalty points, what? Highway maintenance vehicle. That's what I hope happens.
Hugo, have you been following with interest?
No. I mean, I've been following, but not with interest. Like, it's just everyone... You've reached the stage of sort of peak rubbish, with everyone talking peak rubbish. You've got... every sort of side. You've got Labour saying that they're going to offer a no deal until she says she doesn't want no deal, which I just turn around in my head again and again and again. They're saying, will you offer us a deal? No, we're not going to offer you a deal until you say you definitely do want a deal and not a deal. And I can't get anywhere with that. You've got Labour saying their position is that they want a customs union, but not the customs union. They kind of want what we've taken to calling at work the I can't believe it's not a customs union. Which always a customs union. And then you had Jacob Rees-Mogg saying that if Parliament votes in order that there can't be no deal, he thinks we should activate the Queen. Which is just a completely chilling sentence to activate the Queen.
I had no idea that she'd been lying dormant.
I think it's like those
incredible. What like she can achieve on standby mode. Nish.
Look, it's with the inertia over the deal, the lack of a second referendum, it does feel like we're lurching towards a no deal, which is a very worrying scenario. And I'm sort of sick of people saying to me that we survived the Second World War. Because, first of all, you're like, not dying is the bare minimum. Yeah. We couldn't cope with the Luftwaffe, given that we can't handle drones flying over Gatwick. Very important to remember that during the Second World War, Britain had an empire upon which it could draw for natural resources. What I'm saying is, at this point, Gibraltar is going to have to start pulling its weight.
Jen?
Well, I just want to know what Theresa May's plan B is. Because plan A is, imagine your name's Theresa in Brussels for a bit of no-strings Brexit negotiations, but it's all fine, because you're on the pill. So the next morning, you just go to breakfast with your mates, don't you? You don't think about it. Plan B, you're still Theresa. You're still in Brussels having a bit of no-strings Brexit negotiations, but you're not on contraception. So the next morning, you're not out having breakfast with your mates, are you? No, you're at the chemist regretting the terrible decisions you've made and begging for the morning after pill. That's your plan B right there. And let's be honest, the DUP won't be paying for that.
What did she think that a fresh referendum on Brexit would... what did she think that the impact of that would be?
She thought that there would be a sort of civil unrest, to which you would probably say, have you watched the news?
Yes.
People who say a second referendum would be divisive. It's like the country is literally split in two. That is literally what divisive means.
I do feel sorry for her, by the way. The reason I feel sorry for any UK Prime Minister is because when they have a big announcement to make, in the US, the US President walks into the press room and talks to all the journalists assembled inside, in a room, indoors. She has to walk out and stand on the street in the middle of the road. You've turned a diabetic woman into the lollipop lady. She has to make that announcement in the cold. Yeah, you see.
Sorry, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Every time I feel any kind of merest hint of sympathy for Theresa May, I remember Windrush and I go, no, you know what? The only good thing about Brexit is she's having a terrible time.
Balance, balance, always. Balance. Where do you think Corbyn's been on all this? Has he had a helpful week?
Well, you know, they've done absolutely nothing, which is...
Yeah, but in a good way or a bad way? Are they perhaps taking the opportunity to regroup, you think?
Absolutely nothing is good sometimes. Like, if for example, a dinosaur sees you, you don't move at all because their vision is based on movement, so...
Yeah, I mean...
doing absolutely nothing is not necessarily always the bad...
Yes, is it...
I don't know.
I mean,
know
is that absolutely an equivalence?
Well, when I applied for my job as policy advisor to Jeremy Corbyn, he seemed to think so.
The important thing of Corbyn's position is that nothing is off the table.
But nothing's on the table.
Yeah.
There is no table.
There is no table.
That's the problem.
If there is no table, then nothing can be off the table.
Theresa May has said she will not extend the table as well. Ireland wants to make sure that we can get from one side of the table to the other side of the table. But you've put up a border. You call it a doily, we call it a border.
It's down the middle, it's like a table tennis table.
It's pretty much.
Yeah.
I think we've solved Brexit.
There we go.
This is the news that Prime Minister Theresa May has unveiled her Brexit deal Plan B, with all the confidence of a First World War general insisting that walking towards the machine guns is still the best ticket in town. Plan B looks suspiciously like Plan A. It's a bit like when you send your food back in a restaurant. Theresa May has done the equivalent of taking it back to the kitchen where the chef has rubbed it on his arse and put it in the microwave for 30 seconds before replating. Jeremy Corbyn said that it's starting to feel like Groundhog Day, by which I assume he specifically means the bit where Bill Murray has had enough and drives his car into a quarry. 2 points to Neil. Hugo, who delivered a global warning?
OK, so this was in Davos. Davos, the small Swiss town where the rulers of the world go...
How Swiss?
Is it Swiss?
Swiss.
Is what? It? I was worried it might be a bit Austrian-Swiss.
One of the audience will know.
Yeah, Swiss, yeah.
Let's go with Swiss.
Swiss. That's super Swiss.
If you could cut the bit where I said I wasn't sure it was Swiss, that would be super for my job. Thank you. Davos.
We will... Do you listen to News Quiz Extra?
Oh, never.
Right, no.
Yeah, every we'll time.
Cut
it.
Yeah.
Good. Davos in Switzerland. All the world leaders are in Davos.
Famously in Switzerland,
which is famously
of course,
in Switzerland.
I met this bloke once. He didn't have one of those jobs where he'd expect to be knowledgeable. He did not know it was in Switzerland, and I was ashamed. I imagine he was. But, yeah, it's famously, of course, in Switzerland, isn't it, Hugo?
I've been to Davos. Of course it's in Switzerland. In Switzerland, there's this place called Davos.
Uh-huh.
And all the world leaders...
I didn't know that.
This is going to go well in the German parliament where they do this joke.
In Davos, in Switzerland, various rulers of the world all meeting there. Trump wasn't there because he couldn't go because the government shut down. Theresa May wasn't there because nobody invited her because everybody hates her now. And among the many things they were talking about was climate change, one of the main things they were talking about. And Prince William interviewed David Attenborough about climate change. He did the interview on stage like he was a journalist. Bit dull, not so easy, William. And the whole thing, it's kind of like satire, right? The fact that they're talking about climate change in Davos, it's like satire. Because for one thing, everybody's come by private jets. There were something like 1,500 private jets arrived in the space of 2 days, which when you're talking about global warming isn't great. And for another, who had the bright idea of going, I know, we'll get all the leaders of the world to come together and talk about global warming in a place where it's minus 15 degrees and snowing? Stupid. But that's what they've been doing.
I just don't think I need Prince William and David Attenborough to fly to Davos in a private jet to tell me there's global warming, because I was in Edinburgh last year and I got a tan, so... I think the only person that really needs to be told about climate change is Trump, and he tweeted, didn't he, that he thought, because it was so cold, he was like... saying, whatever happened to global warming? And what I enjoyed most about that particular tweet was that there was a response from an 18-year-old student from Assan. I just want to read this out to you because I absolutely loved it, who replied to the President of the United States directly saying, I am 54 years younger than you. I just finished high school with average marks. But even I can tell you that weather is not climate. If you want help understanding that, I can lend you my encyclopedia from when I was in second grade. It has pictures and everything. Your bell end. To be fair, I added that bell end bit, but her point still stands.
The weirdest thing I read about the kind of climate change element of Davos is that they've offered up an event sort of outside the main talks where you can do a virtual reality workshop designed to show you what it would be like to live life as a tree.
What?
Genuinely.
How does that work?
They obviously decided that the wealthiest people in the world lack basic empathy, and the way to solve global warming is by putting them in virtual reality headsets, and users see their arms transformed into branches and their body become the trunk of the tree. And I just think at this point, with the seriousness of climate change, you've got to go the whole hog and really impersonate the experience of a tree and have the person in the headset as a tree, and then after about sort of 25 minutes, have Jair Bolsonaro come in and hack their legs off with an axe.
I think it could have been quite a sort of moving, transformative experience for some people that had never really... You know, someone like sort of Liam Fox, who we've got over there, he might have put the thing on and just read it, had a real sort of awakening. You know, God, I would never realise I'd have had so many leaves. This is absolutely...
He would just be going, leaves mean leaves. Leaves means leaves. I did like the way some people were having a go at Prince William, though, because he interviewed David Attenborough, but he was quite quiet. He didn't grill David Attenborough. You're sitting opposite an environmental icon, and he's going on about humans wasting resources. If you'd grown up in a house that had 775 rooms, what else are you going to say? You know, you're dead right, we shouldn't waste stuff, you know. No, you're dead right. This swan is free range in my sandwich. do you know what I mean? Like, he's right about humans wasting. We waste power, we waste water. I think we're the only people in the world who drink the 3 litres of water at the airport when you can't get the bottle through the security system. I think everybody else throws out the bottle. I was there today and there was a guy who goes, you can't drink that, it's too big. And he went, well, we'll see about that. I don't even want this. Well, don't drink it, Michael. I'm not giving that fella the satisfaction. Which is fine for water, but my friend used up all his deodorant at the checkpoint. He had a Lynx Africa the size of a Shetland pony, right? And the guy said, you can't use that. He goes, well, we'll see about that. And he just like, shh. He shouldn't have been let on the plane. He was technically flammable at that point. Right? He didn't sweat for about 2.5 weeks and two sniffer dogs died of solvent abuse.
He must have been irresistible. This is the World Economic Forum in Davos, where David Attenborough made a speech and was interviewed by Prince William about climate change. Some people were critical of the fact that threats to the natural world were under discussion at Davos since 1,500 private jets were required to facilitate the event. Just wait until they find out about the 4,000 chinchillas that had to be shoveled into the furnace to keep the central heating going. They are more expensive than coal, but for some reason let off a wonderful pine aroma when they pop. Attenborough said that the Garden of Eden is no more, and yet here I am still proudly wearing just a fig leaf. Keeping the dream alive, people, keeping the dream alive. We are not ashamed, for we do not know. I have to use my degree once every 4 years. Among British attendees are Tony Blair, Liam Fox and George Osborne. I know what you're thinking, and it's a tough one, but I would say snog Tony, marry George, and... Sorry, Foxy, you're off the cliff. 2 points to Hugo. Jen, have a listen to this.
First you say you can, then you say you can't, then you say you will, then you won't, then you rant. And I'll go, I'm gonna say it to you. Are these three little words and they mean that we are through? Farewell, so long, goodbye. Farewell, so long, goodbye.
Jen, who's cleaning up and clearing off?
This is about James Dyson moving part of his company from the UK to Singapore, which he has said unequivocally has nothing to do with Britain leaving the EU, which, by the way, he was a vocal proponent of. It's actually a complete coincidence, to make that very clear. Yes, so that's... He's off. He's off and away.
You're very pro-James Dyson, aren't you, Nish?
I'm pro-James Dyson. I'm pro-Brexit. Please don't deport me. I love white people. Big fan. Oh, yeah. Vincent van Gogh.
The other one. Yeah.
Frasier.
All the details.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, yes, mate! Three of my favourite whites. Anyway.
I really hope someone turns on Radio 4 just for that.
Look, James Dyson can quite frankly shove it. Like, I mean, it is incredible. He was a massive...
And that's you speaking as a fan, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a huge fan of his hand dryers. Like, they're great. But obviously, since his, frankly, unpatriotic defection, I'm now going to have to engage in a one-man protest by defecating in every Dyson Airblade I see. I would encourage all patriots to do the same.
He's taking those all out. He's just leaving us with a Dyson dustpan and brush. He's bugged off, mate.
My friend always calls it a Dyson Hoover, by the way, which really annoys me. You can't call it a Dyson Hoover. That's two brand... Kevin, yeah. If you're listening, that's two brand names together. It's like, oh, well, if you don't know the answer, why don't you Yahoo Google it? You can't do that. I'm off to buy a Greg's Big Mac. Where's my Nokia iPhone? You cannot do that. Do you know Jacob Rees-Mogg has a Henry the Hoover? Did you know that?
No, genuinely.
And you can tell it's his, because you know it has a little face on it, and the eye has a monocle.
I'd be very surprised if he's seen any cleaning equipment close up in a year.
He has a man called Henry who...
Yeah.
Henry. Hoover. There we are. Hugo.
It might be true. Dyson is one of these people who... The reason why he wanted Brexit was so that Britain was more like Singapore. So if he then moved to actual Singapore, it would make a degree of sense. But you sort of put it in context with everything else. You know, businesses keep leaving. Brexit-supporting people keep doing stuff like this. Nigel Lawson has got a residency in France. Nigel Farage getting German passports for his kids. Jacob Rees-Mogg's fund leaving the UK. Boris leaving his wife. Actually, that's probably not to do with Brexit.
It's so true. Everyone's desperate to get rid of their British passport, which I think is, you know, like everyone... I wish I could get a Spanish passport. I'm not allowed one.
What, have you got any connection with Spain?
I'm half Spanish, Miles. Okay, my mother's Spanish.
Have you ever been to Dublin? Because you could actually play soccer for us if you have.
Anyone else got an Irish passport? Nish?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, the O'Kumars. Yeah. My grandfather was actually a pint of Guinness.
Bit racist.
How lovely. This is vocal Brexiteer James Dyson, who's moving Dyson's headquarters from the UK to Singapore. Critics say Dyson have washed their hands of the current UK economic situation and then dried them incredibly loudly. Hopefully this isn't the beginning of other Brexit-supporting businesses leaving Britain. If Wetherspoons go, we'll have lost one of the only remaining places in Britain where you can have a fight and a reasonably priced lasagna in the same evening. Two points. To Jen. Nish, who got the bug for crushing the resistance?
Oh, it's superbugs becoming resistant to antibiotics. The health secretary has said that drug-resistant superbugs are now as big a threat as climate change. So, listen, if you're feeling a bit down about Brexit, just think to yourself, it doesn't matter because we'll all be dead when we're washed away in a cloud of acid rain and a hail of drug-resistant viruses. Happy days!
Happy days!
It's good stuff! in vaguely related news, people who have fecal matter with good bugs in them can donate the feces.
To what?
They can be transplanted into people's bowels who have unhealthy stools.
But how do you know? How would you know if your stools have good bacteria?
I'm pretty sure doctor's involved. I'm pretty sure...
It's a very real thing, though. You can go and you can, I suppose, be examined. They say they don't know why it is, what it is that happens to make somebody have super poo, but if they have super poo, then they get it. What they do, there's a process, there's a fecal transplant, which involves taking feces with the right mix of bacteria in it, administering it to the gut of the patient through a tube in their nose or via an enema. And on that note, in fact, of course, we're not that far away from the 14th of February, if any of you don't have Valentine's Day's plans. I want to do something I've not done before, darling. Right.
Nice. Can we talk about something else?
Please.
Right.
Someone's got to come out in favour of Brexit and anti-poo, or this programme cannot be broadcast.
We do need to kind of... You do need to monitor your digestive health, and fellas aren't particularly are really bad at it. I think a friend of mine... I shouldn't tell you this, but anyway. It's the same guy who calls Dyson Hoovers Dyson Hoovers. He went out with a girl, and he didn't treat her very well, and she was a nurse. Then they broke up, and then 6 months later, he had to get a colonoscopy, and she was the nurse in the colonoscopy. She wasn't meant to be there. It wasn't her shift. She was a vet nurse.
It wasn't her job.
Yeah, he was just about to go sleep under the anaesthetic and he looked up and his ex-girlfriend was standing there. She didn't even have, like, a microscopic camera. She had a Fujifilm on a stick. But they're married 15 years now. And,
This is Health Secretary Matt Hancock, who's unveiled a new plan to tackle antibiotic resistance. It seems we've been handing out antibiotics far too freely, as the recent Amoxicillin Wednesdays promotion at my local pharmacy attests. I only went in for some athlete's foot powder and I came out with enough gear to poison the water supply of a modest market town. Look out, Swaffham. Things are going to get trippy. Also this week, we learnt that in the world of fecal... I'm afraid his fecal transplant didn't take. Also this week that we learnt... I can do this, but you have to believe in me. Also this week, we learnt that in the world of faecal transplants, some people are considered super donors. It's also heartening to know that the jiffy bag of faeces I got through my door this week might well have been gifted in the greatest spirit of kindness. 2 points to Nish. And at the end of round one, the scores are Neil and Hugo have 4, and so too to Jen and Nish. We start round two with a cutting from a Somerset Parish newsletter.
Somerset has been gripped by scandal after a brothel opened in the sedate village of Marston Magna. Residents have contacted the police, who have since visited several times.
Thanks to Brian O'Neill for sending us that. Neil, who's got beef?
Oh, the beef eaters. The beef eaters are going on strike and they're part of a group of workers whose pension arrangements are going to be changed away from a defined benefit pension. And they said that the offer that they got from the historic royal palaces isn't enough. So, generally speaking, I have a bit of nervousness, obviously, about the Tower of London or the ceremonial Catholic abattoir, as I like to call it. But I'm with the beef eaters on this one for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think it's very wise to underpay the pensions of people who are looking after the crown jewels. I think that's a little bit tempting for the lads, to be honest with you. So, oh, well, if you're not going to pay me enough, I'm going to leave right now. What's that rattling in your pocket? That is none of your business. Show me your trousers. You have the crown jewels in your underpants. Excuse me, that is a vajazzle. So, That's the first reason. The second reason is the story reminded me to get a pension. I don't have a pension. And my wife, in our family, my wife is the person who has the pension and all the insurances because she is a very responsible human being. So she has all the insurances, even the ones you don't need. And I have no insurances because I'm married above myself. So I look at her and think things will always work out. And she looks at me and goes, shit can go wrong at any moment. Give me all the insurances, please. And I love a good old tourist building because the funniest thing I've ever seen on holidays was in the Colosseum in Rome. And it was a family there with two teenage boys and they started to have an argument. And after about 10 minutes, the dad lost his mind and looked at the young lads and went, will you stop? This is the Colosseum! It is no place for fighting!
Hugo, are you on the side of the beef eaters?
Yeah, I mean, I am. I mean, historically, they're doing quite well at the moment because they did used to get paid in beef. Hence the name.
But people don't know actually why they're called beef eaters, apparently. So some people think it's they got more beef in the rations, and some people think it's a derivation of a French word.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's, well, people are so stupid. They're named after the gin.
I just think it's their costume's weird, isn't it? And I think it's quite hard to have any sort of gravitas or authority in a highly charged salary negotiation when you're wearing knickerbockers, knee-high socks and carrying a pike. I mean, I'd be like, mate.
So you've got the yeoman of the guards, right? The yeoman warders of the lads in the Tower of London, the yeoman of the guards of the ceremonial bodyguard of the Queen. So there's any Americans here listening going, oh, we've got the Secret Service and they've got guns and all the rest. Yeah, but the last UK monarch was killed 450 years ago. You've had 5 American presidents shot since then. So maybe the Secret Service needs to put down the weapons and pick up a pointy stick? Like...
This is the Tower of London, where beef eaters have taken part in industrial action about a change in their pension scheme. Beef eaters went on strike on Monday, an unfortunate misunderstanding of the terms and conditions of veganuary. The warders' employer, Historic Royal Palaces, have insisted that the new pension is simply an attempt to modernise. But you can see why it's hard to explain to someone who's previously been paid in haunches of venison and flagons of mead that they'll now be enrolled into a contributions-based variable annuity scheme. This is the second strike in as many months from the yeoman warders, who before last December had not taken industrial action since 1964, when the Wilson administration removed their rights to behead tourists. 2 points to Neil. Jen, have a listen to this. Looking from the inside out, tell me what you find. Nothing means a thing if you're not beautiful inside. Wonderful song. deeply moved. Jen, who has low self-esteem?
Okay, so this is a story about the new, I believe, modern phenomena about selfie dysmorphia, which is basically brought on by our current obsession with taking selfies with our smartphones and putting various different filters on them to make ourselves look extra gorgeous. If you go on my Instagram account and have a look at my selfies, I have used a few filters, so I do, in some of the photos, look a little bit like a 15-year-old Korean boy, but... So you can go too far, is the point. And I think it's affecting a lot of young people's self-esteem, and they believe or they think that this idea about having filters on your photos is also connected to young people then wanting to go away and have Botox and fillers so that they can look exactly like they do in these photos, which is... I mean, this is a new thing. I think selfies, I think especially for our generation, we don't quite get it, do we? Because we didn't have selfies, did we?
Back in the day.
I think for a lot of millennials, they don't understand why we didn't have selfies, and it's very simple. How many photos would you say it takes to get a half-decent selfie? 685. Back in the 90s, that would have cost you $2,500. Do you know how many trips to Boots that would have been? We just... None of us had the time. And it's such a weird thing, because when I was growing up, we didn't have... Of course, you can nothing like that existed. There was no Botox, there was no fillers. You know, the kind of cosmetics we were buying were like Clearasil, wasn't it? An Impulse. So it is worrying that we've got young girls going out and wanting to have basically plastic surgery to change the way they look. I mean, why would you want to look like a dog that's just swallowed a bee? Have you seen those... Go on Google and put dogs that have chewed a bee. And look at their faces, because that is exactly what Khloe Kardashian looks like.
Nish, of course, you're absolutely selfie daft. What is it that motivates you?
Well, I just like
your chiselled look.
Yeah, this is right here. You can hear my cheekbones. Also, I don't know what Jen's talking about. We don't know what it's like to be in that. I'm right in the middle of the selfie generation, Grandma. I love to Snapchat on my...
You don't know what you're talking about.
I love to Snapchat Kylie Kardashian.
No such person.
Oh.
Even I know that.
Which one's the Pepsi lady?
Who's the Pepsi lady?
One of the Kardashians handed out. Anyway,
Kendall Jenner, 41, and I know the words Kendall Jenner.
Safe,
you don't
brother.
Know where Davos is, but you know Kendall Jenner.
Oh, bide your time.
I do feel very lucky to have completely missed this generation.
Oh,
because,
me too.
Yeah,
God.
I feel like we've sort of been able to...
Dodge all that. I mean, when I was young, I just was, like, overweight, had a unibrow, I had a beard of zits. I mean, nothing's changed too much since then, but...
Be careful who you sit next to when you talk about negative traits being a beard and a unibrow. Tread very carefully, Brister.
You know what they say what you see, and then you think, no, go back.
Also, I mean, in absolute fairness, I've become accustomed to my flaws, and I've just learned to deal with them. My flaws, which include a nose, which a friend of mine, who, on discovering that I had never done cocaine, described as a tremendous waste.
Hugo, have you got chronic body dysmorphia?
I don't think so. Okay. I mean, I'm not part of the selfie generation. I don't do selfies, but I do, as a columnist, have a byline photo. And there's a long tradition with byline photos that basically journalists all have byline photos where they look about 20 years younger than they actually are. But I, for some reason, have always had byline photos where I look about 15 years older than I actually am. I've always had the byline photo of a 60-year-old man. And I don't know why. I sort of always will. And it's sort of better that way around, because sometimes you do meet journalists who you've seen their byline photo and you're like, my God, you're your own mother, you know, all the time. But yeah, and I'm the opposite, which is fortunate, I think.
I guess you're just one of the lucky ones.
I guess so.
Now, Neil, have you had any cosmetic procedures in search of your dream self?
Yes, I used to be Morgan Freeman. I absolutely, completely agree with everything that Jen said, but I do really enjoy plastic surgery programmes where they've gone too far. I do love... not when the normal punters come in and they've got one small thing wrong with them. I like when the people walk in and you can comment, well, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think his nipples should be on his shoulders. You know, there was a woman who walked in this show that I watch, and she goes, I want all my fingers sewn together so I look like a Barbie doll.
You go, who did that operation?
Yeah, no, they didn't. They gave her mittens.
LAUGHTER
This is the rise in so-called selfie dysmorphia, where people are having cosmetic surgery to look more like they do in their heavily edited selfies. I've got an app that adds extra chins to my face. It's called Viennetta. None of this would be happening, though, if we just stuck to using Snapchat to send 10-second photos of our bottoms to strangers, as God intended. And, of course, we wouldn't be having any of these issues if people stuck to the traditional way of improving their appearance, gin. Personally, I have no aptitude with using filters, nor the money for cosmetic surgery, but when meeting people for the first time, I will now insist that they find me bathed in light, streaming through a stained glass window depicting St. Thomas of Aquin at prayer. Just happens to bring out my cheekbones. 2 points to Jen. Nish, which canine companion got someone's goat this week?
Okay, a man in Kansas thought he'd lost his dog when his wife led it outside, according to the reports, to go to the bathroom. And then the next day, it returned, but with another dog and a goat. It had made two friends on the journey. Now, this story made me think three things. Firstly, don't, if you're a journalist, use the phrase "go to the bathroom" about an animal, because it's not like the dog was at the urinal. Secondly, how did that dog in one night manage to get the same number of friends as I managed to get in 2 years of primary school, leading to my mother describing me as being different and that I don't need to worry about it? And I distinctly remember, even at 5 years old, being, listen, I know when you say different, you mean weird. Don't lie to me. And number three, I've been in show business for far too long, because when I heard this story, my first thought was, who's got the film rights to that dog story? And does that dog have an agent? Otherwise, it's going to lose out to either Meryl Streep, Daniel Day-Lewis, or Andy Serkis in a morph suit.
It's sinister. It's a weird story to even be in a newspaper, but it's also sinister. Clearly, you've got two dogs. They're escaping together. They've kidnapped, literally, a goat to have as a hostage to eat when they run out of food. It's not friendly, it's not nice, it's deliverance with two dogs and a goat. It's horrible. It's a horrible story.
But also it's discovered that the other dog and the goat, turns out that they belong to very near neighbours. So, in fact, it's not even a tale of delightful animal
friendship. Well, it's just like, it's Dave's goat.
Yeah, yeah, it's basically a community plagued by negligent pet ownership.
I mean, it's only interesting if the two friends the dog made were like Jennifer Aniston and David Schwimmer, but otherwise it's not really a story, is it?
Your insurance pays out if your dog runs away. I had a dog. Dog died, rang the insurance company and said, listen, the dog is no longer with us. Will you pay out? And she goes, no, it's under the excess in the policy. And I said, no worries. And I said, can I go ahead and cancel the policy? And the woman said, yes, but can I ask why you're cancelling the policy? I was like, because we thought it would be overly cautious to continue to insure a dead dog, to be honest with you. And we've looked online and some of your competitors have very competitive dead dog quotes, right? But I didn't say that, where I said, well, the dog is no longer with us, as I said. And she goes, did he die or did he run away? Because if he ran away, we cover that. And I went, well, then he ran away. And then she goes, well, why did he run away? And I was like, I couldn't read his notes. I don't know. And she goes, I have to put down something. I said, put down fireworks. She goes, we don't have fireworks in May. I said, it came as a shock to the dog as well.
You just admitted to insurance fraud on the radio.
Yeah. But I live in Singapore now. Or Davos, which is near.
Can I just ask, when did all of your hope die? This is a magical story.
During the first round.
Oh, sorry. This is a magical story of some pets being friends on an adventure. And you all have ruined it. We're desperately scrabbling around for hope in an era of Brexit, and these are animals that have made friends, and you've all wrung the joy out of it, and also Kylie Minogue.
This is the latest news from Kansas, where a man who had lost his dog and had lost hope of ever finding it discovered it running across a bean field with another dog and goat in tow.
It's not even news.
It's all well and good having a dog that goes off requisitioning other animals, but the sad side of this story that we're not hearing about is that somewhere there is a confused blind man wondering where his goat is. The trio, who have been described by papers as best friends, actually prefer to think of themselves as colleagues. 2 points to Nish. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share?
Yeah, I've got one from Victor Cuss, who's from County Dublin in Ireland, and it's seen on a Facebook webpage of the animal charity Dogs Trust, actually. Can anyone help temporarily home this dog, as his elderly owner has gone into hospital, and unfortunately, he will be euthanised tomorrow?
Hugo.
This was sent in by Cliff Hutton in Inverness, and he heard it on the BBC World Service. 500,000 Armenians live in France, including the singer Charles Aznavour, who died 2 years ago.
Jen.
This is from Johnny in East Dulwich, who spotted this on the East Dulwich Forum. I am new mum and need to get haircut and colour. Does anyone know a good mobile hairdresser that, if needed, could breastfeed baby during colour process? I do, actually, yeah.
Nish.
This is from David Crane in Brussels, who was listening to We Need to Talk About Death on Radio 4 and heard this. For most people, a funeral is a unique, once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Neil and Hugo have 11, but this week's winners are Jen and Nish with 12. Before we leave you, here is something from The Eye, sent to us by Rick Blakely from Colchester.
Police who found £350,000 in cash hidden in a washing machine have arrested a man on suspicion of money laundering.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Neil Delamere, Hugo Rivkind, Jen Brister and Nish Kumar. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clugston. The chair's script was written by Laura Major, Benjamin Partridge and Mike Shepherd, with additional material by Adele Cliff and Kat Sadler. The producer was Sarah Sharp, and it was a BBC Studios production.